Blog Talk Radio.
Praise the Lord, praise the Lord. Thank you and welcome, everybody. This is the Product Purpose Kingdom Network and this is the show Self-Expression. And I am your host, Brother Robert Pop-Pop Hudson. I'd like to thank each and every one of you for joining us tonight, whether you're joining us via phone or you're listening online. I'd like to thank you for allowing me some time tonight to just talk to you tonight. And with some of the things I wanted to say tonight, of all the one I want to touch on is today is PKN's anniversary, and we started this very day in 2016, and I just think it's a great accomplishment and a long way that we've come, and this being our 1,188th episode for tonight, and like I said, I'd like to thank each and every one of you, including the listeners, no matter where in the world you're listening to, without your help and your support, this wouldn't have happened, so I just like to thank you. So let's go into tonight's topic. Tonight's topic, we're going to be covering the Book of Ruth. The Book of Ruth is very short, so I do have a lot more information to add on. And this is touching off of where I left off last time when I did our last Bible study 2 weeks ago, which was the God Bomb. And it was basically the discovery of Sodom and Gomorrah, or what remained of Sodom and Gomorrah. And we also went into the background of how that destruction came about. And with that being said, you know, through all things considered, you know, the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah was to be something, or it was basically a reckoning of a bunch of wickedness that was happening into those two towns. Along the way, the angels that he sent to destroy the town, they tried to save a family, Lot's family. And in the aftermath of them escaping the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot's wife got turned to a pillar of salt from looking back. And the angels instructed everyone to not look back. And she chose to look back. Why she chose that, we don't know. But ultimately, that was what happened to Lot's wife. Process of them fleeing, they were supposed to go to a city called Zoar, or Bella. when they got to the mountains overlooking the city, they decided not to go into that town. And at this time, Lot's two daughters, they were thinking about the lineage. And so they got their father, the oldest one first, got the father drunk and lay down with him and became pregnant. And the next day, the younger daughter did the same thing. And it seems that the wickedness of Sodom and Gomorrah, you know, some remnants of that have escaped. But, you know, when God deals with some things and he allows certain things to happen, it's part of his master plan. And, you know, out of the two sons that each had was Moab and Ben-Ammi. Moab became the leader of the Moabites, and Ben-Ammi became the leader of the Amorites. And this time, when we're just going to concentrate for tonight on the Moabites, and Moab in particular, because it's going to lead up into some very, very crucial things that's going to happen later on throughout the Bible. All right, and so when Moab, the leader of the Moabites, you know, he was setting up his kingdom, you know, he had many, many battles. And Moab, not knowing his true lineage, so he really didn't have a direction. And so he chose his own direction. He chose his own path, and he wanted to start, you know, his own nation, basically, which he did. And some of his followers noticed that he was worshiping rocks. before each battle. And as his followers, they wanted to know what was he doing, and he said that was his god. And they asked him what was his god's name, and he said this god is named Chemosh. And as Moab continued on to conquer and gain territory, and so he bumped up against the land of Judea, which were able to fight him back. And for a while, there was a truce between the Moabites and the what is now the Israelites in the land of Judea. And certainly clash over territory and certain borders. But clearly, the River Jordan separated both kingdoms. And with that, there was a time that there was some peace. And with that taking place, we're going to, even though it's not mentioned in her chapter, and a lot of the information that I got is from a book called The Heritage of Jesus, I'll put it that way. I don't know why I can't say genealogical. Yeah, genealogical Heritage of Jesus. And so this is where, in the land of the Moabites, where Ruth was a young child, and as Ruth was growing up, she grew up very poor. Her family could barely, you know, feed themselves. So she was sold into the temple of Chemosh at a very young age, around the age of 8. And from there, they would take young girls that had it. They were young and pretty and had no blemishes. So clearly, Ruth met the criteria, and her father was given 30 pieces of silver, and she was there to learn in the temple of Chemosh. There, you know, it seems she was studying to be a priestess, and as the young girls go on, some of them would be chosen to be sacrificed. At one point, Ruth was chosen to be sacrificed, and right up to the altar where she was going to be sacrificed, they noticed that she had a blemish on her arm. And when they seen this blemish, they said she cannot be chosen to be sacrificed. So right there, they picked the next one, and she was sacrificed. And from there, since she had that blemish, she was learning to be a priestess in the temple of Chemosh. There is when she first encountered Naomi and their family. And Naomi, she had a husband. His name was Elimelech, and she had two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. And ultimately, both of her sons would marry Moabite women. And the problem with this is that Elimelech used to live in the land of Judea, and they suffered drought. And as you know, sometimes people do from time to time, they become uprooted. And the part I want to just let you know is, like, we all have that experience that we have. You know, we're gonna be going through a tough time. And even though we say, hey, I think we need to do something, I think we need to make a move, well, Elimelech chose to do that with his family. And even being so drastic as the drought that was there in the land of Judea, that drought was terrible, but, you know, a lot of people stuck it out. And just like, you know, Elimelech and his family, other families choose to leave the land of Judea. A lot of them did not choose the land of the Moabites because that was one of their enemies. But Elimelech chose to take his land over to the land of Moabite, where he settled in, and he practices his craft, and I believe it was he's a blacksmith. So Elimelech moved his family, and they're in the land of Moabites, where, of course, you know, they're treated as second-class citizens. You know, that they were once enemies, and they, from time to time, still consider themselves enemies. So Elimelech made the best of that situation, and he quickly became one of the best blacksmiths there in the land of Moabite. And as I was saying before, you know, we have that notion and that urge to uproot ourselves But we need to steadfast times. And, you know, meditate and stay concentrated in prayer because, you know, once we start moving around, you know, we get a chance to miss a spiritual blessing. It's basically our spiritual address is moved. You know, when we move around and we don't become settled in and we don't dig our heels in to where we at, and I know sometimes it does call for, you know, sometimes call for us to, you know, go ahead and uproot ourselves and our families, and it does happen. And sometimes it does, you know, it is, you know, it makes common sense. But, you know, for the main part, you know, you can just look at it as, you know, where you are is where your spiritual address is. You know, once God wants to send you a blessing, you know, and you've moved, you know, he has to wait for you to settle down and he has to, you know, go ahead and send you a blessing again. And so, you know, just to get back to what was going on in Atlanta, Mobites and LMEG and his family, you know, they met a lot of the Mobites. And, of course, they didn't renounce their religion. They didn't say they were going to start praying to Chemosh because they were in Atlanta, Mobite, or the Mobites, which they, you know, which was their religion. And when, you know, LMEG and his sons, they were not quiet. Even though LMEG was the wisest of all of them and being the head of the household, he would have to tell them to, you know, tam it down a little bit because we're going to draw too much attention and, you know, we don't want to be, you know, thrown in jail or even worse, which wind up happening. Naomi's husband and both sons were killed. And they both had, at this time, they both were married to Mobite women. And that's where we can go ahead and, we're going to go ahead and to Ruth. And I'm going to read in chapter 1. And we'll just go ahead, and I'm just going to go ahead and read chapter 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judea, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech. His wife's name was Naomi. And the name of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judea, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's son, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other named Ruth. After they had lived there for about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her son, her two sons and her husband. Now, at this point, this is where, you know, Naomi just lost, you know, her husband and her two sons. And, you know, she was left in the household with her the two daughter-in-laws, and Naomi decided, you know, it's time for me to go back home from where I came. Because, you know, even though it wasn't like it was she came against her will, she came willingly with her husband. And Elimelech had a sound idea of how they could survive. She knew that, you know, going back home was going to be hard. And that's, you know, the choices a lot of us have once we make a big decision, and then we realize that at some point, you know, times are going to be tough here. And this is where I was going on about, you know, moving your spiritual address. You know, it's not easy on the first hand of just leaving, you know, where you came from and, you know, uprooting yourself. But it's even harder going back because, you know, going back, depending on your situation, sometimes, you may look at it as a failure and saying, hey, I wanted to make things happen here. You know, I left and uprooted everything where I was, and then I moved on somewhere else, and it's not working out, and I'm going home. And I'm coming home basically with the same nothing I had when I left here. So it's, you know, that's a hard decision in itself. And then again, you know, like I said, when you're constantly on the move, you know, it's kind of hard for God to gauge your spiritual address. But, you know, everything, you know, that is done, you know, in the eyesight of God, whatever you do, you know, as long as you're doing it and you're praying, you meditate, you're asking God, you know, I need to make a move, or I need to make a step. You know, what should I do? A lot of times, we make some drastic decisions. A lot of times, we just don't even ask. We just do. And, you know, it's all about, you know, it's not to say that, you know, sometimes we may not, you know, we may have snap decisions to make, and, you know, we have to make them right away. But there are times that we can, and we, you know, and we have the opportunity and chance that we can ask God, you know, God, what is my next movement? God, you know, what should I do? And you know, just ask him. And sometimes it may, you know, the answer may seem so clear that you're like, oh, thank you, God. And then you can go ahead and move on with your decision. Now, we're going to go back to Naomi returning to Bethlehem. And we're going to go ahead with and finish out this first chapter here, which is chapter 1. And I stopped at verse 5, and we're going to continue with 6. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judea. Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness, as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud and said to her, "We go back with you, your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons? Who will become your husband? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It's more bitter for me than you, because the Lord has my husband. Because the Lord's hand has turned against me." At this, they wept aloud. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her, saying, "Naomi, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you, to turn back from you. Where you will go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I die. And there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, but even so severely, and even if death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi? Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law. Arriving in Bethlehem, the barley harvest was beginning. Now, at this point, you know, this is a very, very weird time. Okay, so now, Naomi was a priestess, and everyone understands she was a priestess in the Moabite temple. Now, what's happened is, now that she has fled the land of Judea, the Moabites just didn't like it. Even though she was a former priestess and she married, you know, a man from Judea, it seems like they didn't care at first. And, you know, the deaths of Naomi's husband and her two sons never was really explained. But, you know, I'm tending to think that they thought that if they kill off, you know, the husbands and the father, that, you know, these women, the Moabite women, will return to their respective societies in Moabite. Now, what happened and how we know they were angry, because at the time, there was something called a thief catcher. And these guys, what they would do is, you could say, hey, I lost lost track of a family member, or I lost a certain item, a certain piece of jewelry, a certain ring or a family heirloom. These thief catchers, they were once former thieves. And what they would do is they would be caught, and they would have one or two things to do. They would be sentenced to death, or they were sentenced to carry out for the rest of their lives catching other thieves. And so that's where they got the term of a thief catcher. So a thief catcher was sought out to find out where Ruth went to. Now, Judea is a big land, so that's why they hired this thief catcher. This thief catcher basically was scouring the land, and eventually he tracked Ruth down and reported back to the Moabite temple. They planted two guys basically in the town, basically just to discredit her. Now, Naomi, she didn't deny any of the allegations against her, but, you know, what eventually happens is that she was put on trial. And when she was put on trial, she basically had to admit to, you know, everything that she'd done before, which was, you know, actually take, you know, little young girls and lead them to the altar where they were, you know, slaughtered and sacrificed for the rock god Chemosh. And from there, you know, as she was being accused of, you know, other things, and she admitted it, but she let them know that I accept your God. You know, I believe in God, and I also believe in his commandments. From there, you know, she turned the tables on to the two, I guess you could call them supplants, or, you know, guys that were basically planning to tell lies about Ruth. And once they were discovered that they were actually Moabite, they were led out of the town. And, you know, Ruth, you know, she got some form of vindication, because at the time it seemed like a drought was coming about the land of Judea. But it was just for a short period, and they realized that, you know, Ruth didn't have anything to do with it, and, you know, like the other guys, you know, were trying to say that she was still praying to Chemosh, which she wasn't. Once there at that point, that's where, you know, they had another ritual there, whereas though, being though that Naomi came back and she's husbandless and she has a daughter-in-law, usually your next of kin, they can marry Ruth, basically. And it's because of, you know, for at that time it was, you know, a lot of women that were widowed, and it was basically because their husbands went out to war. They were basically, they didn't have any kind of support. So usually it's either her brother-in-law or uncle-in-law or whoever's, you know, closest in the family, you know, they can take her hand in marriage if they choose and support her and I guess her family, if she had a family. And they would do this ritual, because, you know, at that time, you know, even if a husband would go out in the battle or son or, you know, whoever it is, as far as, you know, a male going out in the battle, sometimes when they came home, you know, because they were going to foreign lands, and it would bring back disease and illness. Sometimes even just surviving the battle wouldn't be enough. Sometimes it would be surviving just the ordeal of, you know, going through foreign lands and picking up different diseases and all kinds of things. Even some would, you know, succumb to small things as fevers. Just because it's just they were out in foreign lands and they contracted different things. And that was just the nature of just at that time, you know, being a soldier or just fighting for, you know, your country at that time. And this was the Israelites, and everybody basically hated the Israelites. So it didn't take much for them to have to go to battle and defend their land, because everybody always looked at the Israelites, well, who are these people? What are they doing here? They don't belong here. And that's how different battles would ensue. So ensue. And this is how all, you know, all the men would have to be always ready to do battle. And like I said, you know, by them just coming home didn't mean that they were going to survive, you know, just leaving the land. And on top of that, sometimes when you battle, sometimes you get nicks, cuts, and things like that, and they get infected. And a lot of times, just by coming home, you know, they didn't come home whole. Some of them had to get, you know, legs or arms amputated because of infections. That was commonplace back then. Okay, now I'm just going to go back to Ruth. Now, Ruth did everything that, you know, a young daughter-in-law would do for a mother, which would be harvest the field and things of that nature. So one of Naomi's kinfolk came and wanted to help. First he came out, the innocent poor, and he just wanted to help out. And next thing you know, he was fixing up the house and doing all kinds of things. And then finally he came to Naomi and says, hey, I'm going to take Ruth as my wife. And, you know, Naomi just responded as a typical mother, well, that's not up for me to decide. And there was a guy named Boaz there, who's also a kin of Naomi. Now, Boaz had his interest in, you know, he didn't make it plain and simple, but they did, you know, would talk at times. And whatever advances that Boaz had to Naomi, she just rejected him. Any kind of gifts he wanted to bring, she rejected him. So at this point, this is where tradition comes at hand. Now, it's not mentioned in the book of Ruth, but what happens is that the initial kinsman that wanted to lay claim to marry her, he basically had to give up the shoe. And giving up the shoe is like basically giving up all claims. And Boaz asked him to give up the shoe, which he did. And Boaz and Ruth married. Now, normally, I would say, okay, this is the end, and that's it. But, you know, just to let you know the importance of what just happened is that, you know, in the long line of, you know, the genealogy of Jesus, this is actually solidifies, and it basically concretes the lineage of Jesus. And how this came about was just the grand design of God, and it just, you know, is what was meant to be. And when I say what is meant to be, because the basic lineage, the Moabite woman Ruth, who, you know, was basically a Moabite. And basically, you can say that she came from, you know, the same land, but on a different opposite side of the River Jordan. All right, with this happening, this actually creates a link where you say all, you know, from the genealogy of Jesus, she creates a link that would basically everybody populated at that time in that part of the world. And with, you know, them having a son, and his name was Obain. And by them having him, they actually creates a whole genealogical linkage with people of all. Now, you can say inside of all the lands, and, you know, of people at that time, from Judea, Mesopotamia, Egypt, so on and so forth. That creates a genealogical link where you can, you know, you say, now Jesus, you know, his lineage is, he's a man of all people, which I think, you know, to some people it probably may not be important, but to me it's more important that, you know, that this creates a link where Jesus is a part of everybody. And which I think, you know, in God's grandest scheme, he meant that to be, because, you know, being a Messiah, and, you know, everybody says, well, that's not my Messiah. He's, you know, he belongs to the Jews. Well, he's actually part Jew, Gentile, Egyptian and everything because of his lineage. And that's why I think it's important when people say, well, he's not for me, or he didn't, you know, they didn't send him. And, you know, some people say, like, right now, today, the people in Israel say that Jesus didn't come yet. But yet he has a link to each and everybody's lineage from that part of the world and even beyond. I believe if we, you know, we can look into it, you know, and as the lineage goes further and further up the chain, you know, more is added. But I think it was more important at that time because eventually the Moabites are wiped out eventually. And their lineage doesn't exist anymore besides the product of Ruth and Boaz. And that's why I think it was very important that happened at that time because the lineage of the Moabites don't exist anymore. And, you know, from there, just to let you know, so Obed, which is Boaz and Ruth's child, he has Jesse, and Jesse has David, and which is the King David in the Bible. And as you know, more importantly, David has Solomon, and that's just half of the lineage of Jesus. And right there, you can just you can see the importance of that family line right there. All right, and let me just wrap up. What's going on with Reuben? Basically, even though Ruth was testified against, you know, falsely, eventually, you know, she was vindicated. But at that time, goes to show you how much of a voice that women had, that two guys that they didn't even verify or check out who they were allowed to testify and basically just, you know, discredit Ruth without any proof of saying that they were eyewitnesses to seeing her praying to rocks, which didn't happen until finally Ruth was able to defend herself. And in the process of that happening, you know, Boaz, who was the elder on the council, during the confession, well, her admittance to being a priestess in the Moabite temple kind of dumbfounded him there because he didn't know everything about her until that happened. And once it happened, you know, once that happened and that came about, as she explained, you know, Boaz, the reason why he didn't act quickly in asking her hand in marriage is because during this trial, you know, he didn't know everything about Ruth. He just knew he liked her. During the outcome of the trial, when she was vindicated, then he had a chance to talk to her. But at that time, the other kinsfolk had staked claim, you know, for a marriage. So that's why, if anybody was wondering why all of a sudden Boaz came about to being a husband, it's because he was an elder and he had to, you know, he was among the judges that had to judge her for her actions. And even though she admitted to what she'd done, it kind of shocked him at first because he didn't know, you know, he didn't know everything about her when she came, you know, back to Judea. And real quickly, I'm just going to go ahead and let everybody know that we're broadcasting on www.blogtalkradio.com/purposekingdom. And anytime that you're online, you want to call in, you can call in at 319-527-6091, or you can call in at 323-870-4174. Anytime you want to speak, just hit the number one. And getting back to some of the details of what Ruth was going through, and, you know, this is what during the time when she was there was the time of judges, where the judges, you know, or councils of the elders, they had final say in a lot about everything. Okay, and let me see. All right, so I'm going to go ahead back into the Book of Ruth, and we're going to go to, which also you can look up in Matthew chapter 1, verses 2 and 6. So Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. And when she went into her, the Lord gave her conception and she bore a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a close relative, and may his name be famous in Israel. And may he be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, who is better to you than seven sons, has borne him." Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her bosom and became a nurse to him. Also the neighboring women gave him a name, saying, "There is a son born to Naomi." And they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now this is the genealogy of Peter, of Perez. Perez begot Haran. Haran begot Ram. And Ram begot Amadel. And Amadel begot Nisham. And Nisham begot Solomon. Solomon begot Boaz. And Boaz begot Obed. Obed begot Jesse. And Jesse begot David. So right there, it's just letting you know, it was showing you that that's the lineage of David. And, you know, as you know, it didn't stop just with David. It went on with Solomon and so on and so forth until we get to Joseph and then Jesus. And it's kind of nice to know that, you know, in the Bible, that you can find some things like that as like the genealogical link to Jesus, and, you know, and to read and know that there is a whole connection with a lot of different people, and it comes from a lot of different generations of, you know, great servants of God. You know, and at some point, you know, start with Abraham at one point. Actually, I can go back to the lineage, and from as far back, it starts with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Judah, Perez, Hezron, Ram, and Hebel, Nashon, Solomon, Boaz and Ruth, Obed, Jesse, David, Solomon, Rehoboam, Abijah, Asher, Jehoshaphat, Joram, Uzziah, Joash, Ahaz, Hezekiah, Manasseh, Amon, Joseph, Jachin, Shaliah, Zebeb, Abul, Eklam, Azor, Zoreh, Akim, Elud, Elzar, Nathan, Jacob, Joseph, and Jesus. So that's basically the lines and all the genealogy of Jesus. And like I said, it goes as far back as Abraham, and I think that's pretty good. With that being said, I'm going to do the call of salvation, then we'll go ahead into the announcements. But pretty cool that just through the genealogy, you know, like I said, it's just he connects with everybody. And, you know, also I learned a couple things, you know, with Naomi. And Naomi seemed to, you know, lose a little faith coming back home. But, you know, as she seen that as Ruth and Boaz, as they got together and, you know, they had a child, I think they sparked Naomi and saying, "Hey, you know what? I feel connected to what's going on." And, you know, and she took right to the baby. And everybody seen, you know, and as it was, you know, stated, everybody seen how there was a difference about Naomi now, that she did have some joy. You know, even though, you know, like she said, she didn't want to take up another husband, and she didn't want enough, you know, have babies. At least there, right then, just being that part of doing the grandmotherly part of, you know, taking care of the baby, I think she just found some happiness there. And it's just, you know, good to hear. And, you know, when God does some things, he just has a way about doing things. And when you think that, you know, oh, man, that's terrible. She lost her husband and her two sons. But in the end, you know, she got restored, you know, and she also came back to get a chance to go back to Judea, which it never was stated, but I had the feeling that she never wanted to leave. So with that being said, I'm just going to go into the call of salvation, and I'm going to conclude. I want to do the announcements, and I'm going to conclude tonight's show. The call of salvation is pretty simple. You know, I know everybody's, you know, well aware that, you know, we can't walk in the sanctuary without having that social distance. So we need to know that, you know, we can set up our own sanctuary in our own homes. And one of the things that we can do is, being though that we don't have an opportunity to walk into the sanctuary, you can create that here in your own house. And, you know, what you can do is, if you have friends or family members here at your house, you can just ask them to, you know, accept Christ in their life. At your house, or, you know, and one of the ways you can do it is just let God know that you accepted Jesus as your personal Savior. You know, God has done a lot, you know, for us. He had a lot of patience with us. And so now that we finally, you know, arrived at the moment of we're saying, hey, you know, I need to change my life around. I need to make sure I take advantage of the situation of having the opportunity of getting closer to Christ. And one of the ways you can say, God, I accept your sacrifice. I accept Jesus Christ dying on the cross for my sins. I know I've been a sinner, and I wish to change my ways. I know I've tried everything my way, and now I totally accept you in my life. I've totally accepted that. I've turned over a new leaf in life. For you I live. Thank you so much, Jesus, for dying for me, for dying for my sins. Now I need to step up and take responsibility of what I've done and repent for my sins. And once you said that, you know, you're saved. And the next thing you need to do is just let someone know. You can just text someone, you can call someone, you can Skype them, Zoom, whatever you need to do. You go ahead and do it and let the world know that you accepted Christ in your life, and that you're exploring a new avenue where you wish to renounce your sins and your ways of being a sinner. Next thing we suggest you do is find a Bible-believing teaching preacher sanctuary that will nurture you in the word of Christ. Like I said before, you know, we can't walk into a sanctuary, but what we can do is we can Zoom some certain things. We can, you know, we don't physically have to be in a church to be part of a church. So I'm quite sure this is one of the best times where you, instead of physically going to an actual church, you can actually Zoom it and you can actually see, and you should be able to get a vibe of how that congregation is. And if you found a good one, you know, let us know. You know, maybe we might want to come and celebrate too. And one of the ways you can contact us, is via email at purposekingdomnet@gmail.com, where you can see your comments, questions, concerns. You can simply say hello and let us know you found a sanctuary on Zoom or any one of the social media platforms they have. And we gladly like to share and celebrate too along with you and your family and friends. We're also on Instagram and Twitter at purpose_kingdom. You can do likewise as far as your comments, questions, concerns. We're anywhere where podcasts are broadcasted. All you have to do is type in Purpose Kingdom and hit the follow button. And that way you won't miss a single episode of Purpose Kingdom Network. Also, we're on, we broadcast through Blog Talk Radio. We're on www.blogtalkradio.com/Purpose Kingdom. There you can simply type in the show name or host name, and you can hear that show in its entirety and at your convenience. One of the things I one of the programs we have in our archives is the last seven words and seven up service. You can just simply type that in, and you can just get a nice hour and some change of a good service, a good word. And don't forget to, you know, share with a family friend or family and friends. We also invite you to like us on our Facebook page, where you can see our upcoming shows and advertisements. Right there, it is you can follow the links there to any of our past or previous shows. Also, so you can just pull up the page, and if you see any of the ministry that interests you, you can just hit the play button, and you can hear that show. Also, we invite you to follow us on Anchor.com or Anchor FM, or through the link on our social media pages for Morning Word of Praise. Almost each and every day that we're able to broadcast a Morning Word of Praise, just feel free to follow the links on our social media pages, and you can get a Morning Word of Praise through Anchor.com or Anchor FM. Okay, and with that being said, God's will, God's blessing. We hope you join us tomorrow evening at the 9 p.m. hour. And I believe we have, but I know we're going to be broadcasting tomorrow. So please feel free to join us at the 9 p.m. hour. It's going to be great. And as my memory starts getting jogged, I will, if I can, remind you who's on tomorrow evening. All right, at the 9 p.m. hour. Okay, we're going to wrap up everything and going into conclusion. Also, I was on last night, so don't forget, if you want to hear my interview with boxer Nate, Mr. Miller, you can go back into www.blogtalkradio.com/Purpose Kingdom, and you can hear that interview. All right, and just wrapping things up. Now, the Book of Ruth is very short, and it seems like it's not really informative. But it is. And also, you know, gives you a reference of how many, even though it everything moves quickly. And just to let you know, at 9 p.m. tomorrow evening is going to be Iron Sharpens Iron with Sister Mary Scott. And don't forget, Iron Sharpens Iron tomorrow evening at the 9 p.m. hour. And that's going to be Sister Mary Scott. It's going to be a good show. Don't forget, if you want, you know, set an alarm. She's going to be on, and it's going to be a good show. Okay, I just want to wrap up real quickly. The Book of Ruth is, even though it's a short chapter, it's not many pages, but everything moves quickly. And you know, one of the things that is, you know, that's pointed out, even though it is just a roughly an abrupt, that you know, Elimelech uprooted his family because of a drought. And I know in tough times, you know, we have a tendency to want to be able to move. Even though it worked out in, you know, in God's favor of how they ended up in the land of the Moabites. You know, a lot of times we have to make sure that we seek permission before we make a move. Sounds a little silly, but it's not. If you can place yourself, or you can just remember when you're a preteen, maybe 12, 13, there's some things that you know that you had to have permission for. And, you know, one of the things we would do is we would ask our parents. And that's the same thing with God. You know, spiritually, you know, we sometimes think that it goes hand in hand with our emotions. When we react emotionally, you know, spiritually, sometimes it might not agree with us. Like just all of a sudden moving and uprooting yourself, and maybe without, you know, prayer, that a prayer or a consultation with God where you are reassured that the movie you're making is a good one. Ultimately, you know, as I put myself in Holland's shoes, I try to see every very, very drastic reason why I would, you know, uproot myself from, you know, my homeland and, you know, establish myself in the land of my enemies. Even though it seems it is possible that God did, you know, give him permission. But it's not stated, like I said, the Book of Ruth is very short and it doesn't explain a lot of things. And a lot of the information I got, as I was, you know, explaining it earlier, that came from the book called The Genealogy, the Heritage of Jesus. So we got past that. All right, now, I did get a lot of information there. But it's not, you know, the chapter of Ruth is not really give a great deal of explanation, like a lot of chapters in the Bible. But I guess it was, you know, I guess a lot of information that was provided in Ruth was what was known. And, you know, the Bible doesn't put out, you know, anything that's not credible. So, you know, I guess if you find one word that's not credible and it's in the Bible and someone comes along and says, look at this. The whole Bible is a sham. So that's why, you know, sometimes in certain chapters, too, I've noticed where things are just pretty short and pointed. And it's just, you know, that's it. It's, you know, this is what happened in the end. And so the Book of Ruth is just like that. It's just pretty much, this is what happened in the game, and this is the end. And that's thing, you know, on to Samuel. And like I said, I pretty much appreciate, you know, how the Bible is put together, whereas though it's basically facts, because I don't think after all these years that the Bible's been printed and that the facts has been laid out, that, you know, someone can unprove it, then you would have a lot of people not reading the Bible, which I would, you know, I would understand at that point, because, you know, like I said, you know, people always are looking to discredit things. They're looking to discredit or validate something. And, you know, one of the ways to make sure that if you're putting out something, that you make sure it can be validated. And I think that's pretty much what the Bible is. It's a validation of, you know, God's commandments and the coming of Jesus. And I think it's, you know, I appreciate the accuracy. With that being said, this is unfortunately end of tonight's show. And I will be back in 2 weeks with guys on God's Blessing. I'd like to thank every one of you for calling in. I'd like to thank our online listeners. No matter where you're at in the world, I just appreciate your listenership. And thank you so much for your support here at Purpose Kingdom Network. Just can't stop thanking the online listeners. You're all over the world, and I'm glad that we can stay connected here at Purpose Kingdom Network. And as I said before, feel free to join in 9 p.m. tomorrow evening, Iron Sharpens Iron. We have Sister Mary Scott. With that being said, I just love doing what I'm doing. I can't imagine doing something else right now this evening besides broadcasting. It's been fun. Have fun. I'm glad for those that were able to join me last night. I hope you had fun there with the sports segment. That was my first live guest I had. And like I said, if you missed it, feel free to go to archives and listen to it again if you want, or just share it with a friend. Like I said, I thank everybody that helped contribute to the show. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. This is a lot of fun. And as always, I can't wait to get back on the airwaves. So I am just closing out, and I will see you in another 2 weeks with God's Will, God's Blessing. Peace.
Jesus led. He raised me, I will not lose. He saved me, I will not lose. Set me free, I will not lose. Devil wanna see me down, I will not lose. He saved me.
Yeah.